ladies and gentlemen, is why you are all here today. All trusted friends. And why Charlie and Tony are here today. Our American friends. To endorse the global nature of this venture. Let's hear it, ladies and gentlemen. Hands across the ocean.
Okay, everyone, welcome to episode 78 of the Great Divide podcast. Episode 78, hard to believe. And this is going to be a really interesting show for everyone concerned, I think. But before we get into that, introduce my co-host, our illustrious co-host, Svein. Hello, Svein.
Hey, Tom. How are you? Gosh, that was a rough one. It sounded like Bryan Adams there.
Yes, you did.
Yeah. Hello, Tom.
No, we're doing well, and this is going to be a very fun episode. We as we can hear in the background, we have actually a ton of cool guests. So
we do.
That's your cue.
We do, and one of them is lurking in the background as he often does. That's our benefactor, Mr. John Gouveia.
Hello.
Hello, John. Now go back on mute.
Did I miss my cue?
No, you're fine. Now mute yourself.
Yeah, okay.
Without John, none of this would be possible. But we have two other very, very special guests, and I'm sure you guys are going to be very interested in these two. They just happen to be the Flying Watson brothers, Bruce and Jamie. Welcome, guys.
Hey,
that's a right upward punch.
Hello.
Hi, Tom.
Hello, guys.
Hi, guys.
Welcome from sunny Scotland.
Oh, is it sunny today?
It is sunny today, Svein. How's things up your neck of the woods?
Not quite so sunny.
Oh.
But it's very fresh. I plan to take a long walk after we're done recording, and that should be very refreshing.
Ah, sounds good.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, hey, the main reason we're here today is because, and I've been kind of teasing this on the webpage, that we've got some important announcements and some cool announcements coming. And I guess we'll just get right to it. I mean, a lot of people have been talking about looking for new music, whether it's from Big Country, whether it's from Bruce and Jamie, and we've got some new music to announce today. And
we do.
It is from Bruce, it is from Jamie, and it is also from me. So yeah, so we've got a new project we put together. It's called WKW, and Bruce and Jamie, why don't you guys take it from there? Let people know what this is. And we're gonna be premiering these. We've got three songs. We're gonna be playing them on the show today. So yeah. I mean,
yeah. So we had we just had this idea starting to write new songs, and we thought, well, I always find it good to collaborate with other people, you know. So Jamie and I can write songs and take them so far, and also with Tom being a fan of Big Country, we're also a fan of Tom's music as well. So we thought, let's do a hands across the ocean kind of thing and send our music files over to America, and then Tom would send them back to Jamie and I, and we collaborated, and hopefully we're going to do a new album. We're three songs in at the moment, so we're going to let you hear some of those results in this podcast. What do you think, Jamie?
Yes. Since we've recorded the Skids album, we've been working on that the past year, and we've been out touring with them. We had some extra time on our hands and some spare songs, so basically we just had some songs left over, and then once we sent them over to you, Tom, it's the magic sort of happened.
Yes. And it is Hands Across the Ocean. We took we stole the title from the movie The Long Good Friday, where Harold Shand, Bob Hoskins, does his speech, which is Hands Across the Ocean. And we thought that would be a good title for this little three-track EP that we've done at the moment.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And that's what opened the show, for those of you who heard that and might have wondered what that was. Because I hadn't heard of that movie until Bruce brought it up, and I still haven't seen it. I need to find it and see it. But But anyway, yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's fantastic. And gosh, I just totally lost my train of thought. So I'm gonna have to edit this out. This
part.
It's always good when we're just kind of spontaneous and having a chat on Skype. Again, when you go to sort of official interview mode, it's like.
But no, it's been a very cool thing. And the funny thing is that this is, aside from speaking with you the last couple of days, Bruce, testing all this out, this is the first time we've ever actually spoken, you know, while we've been working on this, which is pretty amazing. So, go ahead.
It's just, it's weird, you know, doing this Hands Across the Ocean thing, whereas we're sending like music files, you know, through the air kind of thing. We're not actually sitting in a room together. Yeah. Well, Papa Jamie and myself, we sit in a room together, obviously.
Well, it's a different way of working, isn't it? Really? Yeah. It's strange, because we're used to obviously going in the studio and cranking up the amps, and you'll do your drum track and do your bass, and then that'll be mine and Dad's turn to go in and do our bits. But
it's an interesting way of working. I quite like it. When people hear the music, they realise that there's not actually... Well, Tom's playing bass and guitar as well, but he's also... a mean drummer.
only mentally.
Yeah. But you've done some very clever programming.
Yeah. Dr. Roboto the second.
Yeah. We're going to call you Dr. Roboto. Oh, which was Mark's nickname. Hey,
I'll take that. It's funny, when I first started to program drums, a drummer that I had been working with and playing with, he said, no human drummer can play this. You've got cymbal crashes happening at the same time. You've got fills. You know, I'm going to need eight arms. So I've kind of gotten a little bit better at it. But anyway.
I'm not a drummer, so I can't tell the difference. The drummer's just kind of, they sit behind you making noise. Sorry, Mark. I'm only kidding.
Fantastic. Oh, man. Well, so, I mean, how did this happen? I hear someone ask. And that someone is me.
Well, pinching myself.
Yeah, I mean,
it started so long ago. I can't actually remember when we started this, Tom.
I think what started it, and you know, Svein and John, feel free to jump in at any point. I don't mean to hog all the time here, but I think, I mean, from my perspective, I just remember I had done an EP called Rail that I put out, and I'd sent you some stuff, Bruce, and you were very kind and commented on the stuff and, you know, said some good things about it, and I really appreciated that. And then I threw it out there one day. I just said, well, if you ever want to write a song together, just let me know. And I wasn't sure if you would ever take me up on that, which would have been fine, but I just thought, you know, I love Bruce Watson. He's one of my guitar idols and one of the guys who influenced me. So why not throw it out there? And then like a couple of days later, Bruce sent me a couple of demos. One was for one of the songs you'll be hearing, which is called Seven Swords. And the other is for a song that Bruce and Jamie had done previously called The River Stays the Same. But I guess this was probably the first demo that you guys had done of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you just said, you know, we never been able to finish really Seven Swords and interested in something else happening with maybe River Stays the Same. So see what you can do with these. So I just thought, oh, my God, you know, it's Bruce Watson just sent me some demos and said have free reign at them. So,
yeah, I mean, I thought Seven Swords, I thought the gem was a good idea, but it was lacking a chorus. And I think you just went to town and you wrote a new chorus and stuff like that. And it was, you know, this is going to work. It's great when, well, for me, there's certain people I can collaborate with and certain people I've tried to collaborate with and it doesn't work. And I think this definitely works. And when you came up with that chorus, I thought, well, that's kind of along the lines of what I might have done anyway, you know. And so you had a bit of telepathy going there.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. And yeah, I mean, you know, I recorded like my rough version of these songs, or at least the first one, and I kind of sent it to Bruce and Jamie, and I just was like thinking, oh, man, I hope they like this, you know. And Bruce...
No, we loved it.
Yeah, I thought it was great.
They responded, and they both liked it, and then we just went from there, so... And Jamie, it was awesome. What was really awesome for me was when I started getting your parts, both of you guys, because then it felt like a really, you know, living, breathing type of thing.
Yeah.
It's sort of, once it's like making a meal or something, once you get all the ingredients and put them all together, it seems to sort of taste and smell good, you know? So
Taste and Smells.
Where do we get out of that?
That's the next song title, Taste and Smells.
We're getting working on that one tonight.
This EP definitely smells.
It does smell.
It smells brown. Welcome to
Brown Town. I think we're a very good virtual band.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so too. It was so amazing how it all seemed. I mean, you guys are so ridiculously busy that I'm just amazed that you had any time at all to do these things. I mean, and like I said on the last show, for the listeners out there, I mean, if you just go to Big Country website and look at their schedule, it's absolutely jammed. It's nice. So I think
the Skids stuff as well, and obviously we co-wrote a few of the songs on the Skids album, and it was just like time is, there's just not enough hours, enough days in the week to do what we want to do. It's like, well, we've got those three songs again, the Skids album, and then we thought, hold on a minute, we're doing another three songs. Things are seem to be coming in threes at the moment, you know. So it's like, and now we're going to start working on more. I mean, I think we can definitely get an album out of this collaboration.
Yeah.
But again, it's like your schedule is, you know, you've got your own life as well, and there's just not enough hours. But this is going to be a great challenge to come up with an album, a 10-track album, something like that. We're up for it. We've got the sleeves rolled up.
Yeah.
Well, Swine, do you have any thing you want to jump in on?
I have many questions, but you guys are really having a great flow.
Brian, how's it going?
Hey guys, I woke up.
Hi, Swine. How are you?
All right, so I can ask a question. That's fine.
Yeah, jump on in.
I think one of the fun things is that leading up to this podcast, Tom would be teasing things a bit and then saying we have something really special. We hope it's great and looking forward to having this discussion. But the fun thing is, and I think people missed this clue, is that Bruce also had previously teased this with the song title. So what are your plans really as far as introducing this project to the world, apart from the podcast, which will of course give it immediate worldwide acclaim and fame? But obviously touring is not going to be so easy to manage.
No. Yeah, that'll be tough.
Yeah, I mean, that's I don't think that's going to happen. It would be great if it could.
Maybe like a Big Country convention or something. I mean, we could.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
That would be a good one, I think. I mean, it'd be nice to tour it. I mean, who knows? You never know. Me and Dad hopefully might get back over to the States at some point. So you never know. We might be able to put a couple of shows together. Hopefully.
I like that idea of the convention. I never thought about that one. So.
I'll leave that to you guys. You can organise a convention, can't you?
Oh, yeah.
You guys sort it out.
Yeah.
We're lazy. I think to kind of answer your questions, fine. I mean, if these songs, when they go out there, whether tomorrow or whatever, obviously, Tom, Jamie, myself are going to continue doing it and hopefully get an album's worth and just put the album out there, maybe use them, see if we can get them used in movies or anything like that, and just get the songs out there. Touring, obviously the touring thing will never happen, but that convention idea sounds quite good to me. It would be good to, you know, be up with Tom in the flesh again and actually play the songs, you know, with each other instead of virtually online, you know. So yeah, that would be great. That would be cool. I'd love to do it.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly my thoughts on it too. That would be fantastic.
So let's have a convention in America, right?
Yes.
Oh yeah.
I think it's time for a musical interlude, and we're going to do something special for Swine, I think.
Oh yeah.
We're going to play one of Swine's favorite songs for a bit.
Oh.
Can't wait.
Jesus, tuning his guitar that one. Oh. So we understand that Swine's a huge Look Away fans, so we're going to give you a lot of blast at
this.
1, 2, 3, 4, 1. Thank you.
it's fine. Yeah, nice.
I'm speechless.
Beautiful.
I have no speech.
We just had to get out of our systems, man. Yeah.
That was.
I watched you loved it.
That was classic.
That's marvelous.
That was classic. Oh my gosh.
Well, this means I can have a request of my own for later, right?
Yeah. We'll play it again. No.
Oh man!
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, you know that's good because maybe we should take this opportunity to start playing a couple of the songs or the songs since we've got three of them. So I guess we'll start with Seven Swords, and why don't we just we'll play that now, and then when it's finished, maybe we can just talk a little bit about this one, and then we'll go on to the others. So here we go. This is the first collaboration that we did, and this song is called Seven Swords.
He joined the regiment. Six stone heavy and the fate was set. Rolled the cricket dice for the life's a bet. A wildcard story from a loaded deck. You can work the mine or you can fire a gun. Stone set choices for the chosen ones. But men will break when all the medals are won. Seven samurai midday sun. We will mark our place above the sun's eye.
Yeah.
Okay, so that was Seven Swords, and how do you feel about this tune, Bruce? How it came out and how it came about, and tell a little bit about how this whole Seven Swords idea started, because you wrote the bulk of these lyrics.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, it was so long ago I can't actually remember what I was writing about. I mean, the intro is kind of a bit reminiscent of the song Echoes that I did with Stuart Leary way back, and it just kind of leaned into that sort of Clash, sort of Mick Jones kind of chordal thing that I was doing. Lyric-wise, I cannot remember what I was. I think I was probably online and probably doing that old, trying to get inspiration and going through Wikipedia and sort of war poetry and stuff like that. I just get information. That Orange Blossom voice thing came up from somewhere, and I liked the sound of it. Orange Blossom voice.
It's a great opening.
I should have did my homework and went back.
Well, that's okay, because you know, some of those lyrics of even earlier Big Country songs are hard to explain and describe, but there's something about them that feels right, and I think that's
I think because we were doing that stuff with the Skids, and I knew Richard Jobson used a lot of war poetry and stuff like that in his lyrics, so I think I was just, you know, doing a bit of research on things like that, and the line just came up, and I used it, and then it's one of those things that it sounds better than what it actually means, I think, you know.
That's great, though. So, I mean, those songs are open to people's interpretation, and that's always interesting, too.
Yeah. So. And as you say, my voice does sound a bit like Joe. I don't do it intentionally, but because I'm not a singer as such, I tend to sort of flip between Joe Strummer and Bob Dylan. It's just the nature of my voice. And it's kind of weird because I do sing with Skids, but I don't sing with Big Country, mainly because the guitar styles that are different between the two bands, but also the Skids are tuned down to D and Big Country are in standard tune. And I find that I can hold the tune a bit better if the song's in the low register, a D.
Interesting.
Kind of, my voice is kind of like spine, you know, it's like a bit raspy, you know.
But I love that. I think it gives it that grit, yeah. You know.
Whereas Jamie can do falsetto, and Mark's the same. Jamie and Mark are in that high falsetto range, and there's no way in hell I could even dream of getting up there.
Yeah. I'm more Roger Moore down there. Kind of.
When I'm talking, it's speaking like this.
Well, I wanted to ask about that because, Jamie, I mean, your vocals sound great on this too, and you've got some falsetto stuff happening. And it was great to get all that stuff. I mean, what I meant to do before this show started, I have to send this to you guys, but I wanted to take a screenshot of the way this song looks when I'm mixing it. And to do that, you'd have to have a monitor that's probably, I don't know, like 5 feet wide. I mean, they're literally like on. Literally, that's easy for me to say. On set,
literally,
that's what.
Literally,
there you go.
That's the way us lazy people say it. But I mean, there are probably like 80 tracks on this song, whether it's vocals, guitar parts. So anyway, Jamie, talk a little bit about what you think of this tune, and I think, you know, you should take some lead vocals sometimes too, because your voice is great.
Oh, thank you very much. Well, it's kind of. I'm kind of a bit like Dad in the sense I've never seen myself really as a vocalist. I've always been more interested in like getting a song and taking it to a certain level and just writing. But certainly having to take on the role of working with Richard and the Skids now, I've been doing a lot of singing, a lot of backing vocals and just arranging harmonies and when we've been recording. So that's sort of given me a wee bit more confidence and learning like certain mic techniques and stuff like that. So I've sort of just really been just sort of experimenting, which is the good thing about being in the studio and we're having the quickness now of the laptops to record with and things like that. You can just, you know what it's like, you can just layer vocals on top of vocals and go, that one works, it doesn't, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's basically having the time to do it, which has been good. Whereas back in the day, it was time was money, you had to go in the studio and nail it. Whereas now we've sort of got a bit more time to sit down and work on things, which is nice.
Yeah, I mean, my downfall with the vocals is I just can't do harmonies. I can't follow harmonies, you know, and that's what's great about, like, Jamie and Mark especially as well. is they're great at arranging harmonies and then actually going in and doing those harmonies, whereas I just end up falling the vocal and it just sounds terrible. It just sounds like two of me, which is double trouble, you know.
No, not at all. I mean, yeah, that's, I think that's the cool thing about these songs is that they've got so many layers in them, both guitar wise, yeah, vocal wise, everything. So I mean, it's almost like the old, I certainly didn't do this intentionally when I was mixing this stuff, but I mean, it's kind of like the old Steel Town approach, just throwing everything in there.
Yeah, yeah. It's like I was down at Liam's studio, just mixing. I'm mixing some Skez acoustic tracks, and we were pulling files across for the hard drive, and Liam just turned around and went, "There's 90 odd tracks here, you know." And on some of the tracks, it's like one hand clap. It's going, "Oh my God, there's only one line of vocal on that track."
Oh man.
And just with the technology nowadays, we were doing things like for the Burning City Skids album. I mean, I had Richard singing into a mobile phone at one point, then sending the tracks down to Youth. It was so... It's just great that you can do that these days. You know, like it says, Jamie said earlier on, you know, in the studio back in the day, it was like, you know, you had to keep one eye on the clock as well because it's costing a fortune. But, you know, I'm like yourself, I've got this like laptop and I've got an interface, which most people have got now, you know, and I've got everything in a rack mount and I can take it to hotel rooms and just get the headphones on and send stuff to you. You know, it's just, technology's brilliant. The only thing we don't have is the interaction you would have in a real band where you're sitting across from each other. You know, that's the only thing that's the only downside. But this, what we're doing, I think actually works.
Right, exactly. And I mean, you know, I'm just speaking for myself, but as someone who has followed, you know, your music for so long and has gotten to know you a little bit over the years, it felt like that really helped us just be more comfortable to send our ideas and,
yeah,
you know, because
And we hardly spoke either because we didn't. I mean, I didn't get my Skype up and running until a couple of days ago. Same with yourself. But everything we did was via email. Like the ideas we had, you know, everything was done via email, which can be really awkward because you can't read the tone of an email different from when you're speaking with someone in person. You know.
Yeah, exactly. So you're basically telling me that when you said "that part sucks, moron," that you might have meant that in jest.
Yeah, completely. I mean, yeah. It was done in a very, you know, camp Scottish accent when I said it, but you couldn't read that tone.
Oh, my God. That's so funny. Well, hey.
And when you said, you know, "shut up your ass, motherfucker," you know what I mean? I could tell it was a term of endearment. It was a backhanded compliment. You're going to be putting a beep over that.
I hope so.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, anybody else have any thoughts about that song? And, you know, I'm curious because I literally haven't really gotten much. I don't know what Svein or John thinks of it. So I'm curious what you guys think.
Oh, we told you some stuff.
Yeah, you did. Surely. You did.
But it's interesting to hear because, you know, both John and myself have been privileged to kind of follow this on the sidelines from the beginning when you got these files.
Yeah.
And what you just talked about really echoes how I remember it as well, that, oh, Bruce sent me this thing and said, "See what you can do with it." And that there seems to really be minimal or total free reign. I mean, do whatever you want with it. So how do you start with that open canvas? It's wide open. How do you start?
Well, it's just, like I say, it's, you know, either one of us, yourself or Jamie or myself, you just come up with a germ, just like a little seed, and you can take it so far. This is my point of view. I mean, I can take it so far, and then I kind of get Jamie involved, and he takes it so far. And then, like Svein said, it's a blank canvas, and it's hands across the ocean over to Tom, and he takes it so far, and then we have a completed song, and then it's just down to the mix. And there's so many different ways that, for my style of writing anyway, there's so many kind of layers there. You can almost make about two or three different versions of that song by mixing it different, by bringing instruments up and bringing instruments down. You know, you can, it's like a song's always kind of unfinished, I think, and then you've just got to go, like, put the foot down and say, right, that's it, done it,
yeah.
Stop.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
And that's often been my problem, you know, with because, you know, as you said before, technology is so great, but there's also some difficulties with it where you have some, like for the drum programming, for example, the program I use, I could use, I have like, you know, 50 different sounding drum kits that I could pick. If I pick one and I like it, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, well, what about this other one? Maybe it's a little bit better, you know, so...
You got your own bundle, don't you? It's like,
So eventually you have to stop, but...
Yes.
But, for me, to answer Svein's question, it's... You know, that Seven Swords was the first one where I was just like, well, how much should I do on this? You know, like, I didn't want to force anything or, you know... So I asked Bruce, I just said, you know, are you okay with me just trying anything? And he said, yeah, just do whatever you want. If we don't like it, we'll tell you. If we like it, we'll tell you. So, I mean, I just went ahead and as Bruce said, I had a chorus that popped into my head and I put that on that song. And again, you know, just with my own music, people will often say, well, that sounds like Big Country. And, you know, I've had people who say you should check.
Yeah, I'll get that too.
But for me, it's like almost like you should change it so it doesn't. And like I've had people say, like, well, you should maybe change that part because it sounds like a Big Country part. And I think maybe I should change it. And then I'll think, well, that's just how I naturally play. It does sound like Big Country, but that's just how I'm not trying to make it sound that way. It just that's how it comes out.
Yeah, it's not contrived. It's just if it's natural. I mean, I always think if something's natural and if you like it, then it's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too. And
if you think it sounds good, it usually is.
Yeah.
Yes.
Exactly. So.
And if you don't like it, you can just
go fuck yourself.
I do have one thing I need to say here. And so I don't get a kick out of this. I did actually get a slight little intentional Kiss reference in the end of Seven Swords. And that is a drum part. There's a little drum part that I put in there. And it actually fit the song, so I did, but I left it that way. But there's an old Kiss classic called Strutter. And there's a particular drum track that starts off that song, and I put that in the end of Seven Swords. So.
Oh, Brian, that's awesome. Well, you can deal with the court case, Tom. Right? Yeah. Deal with that one, now that you've admitted it.
Yeah, Gene Simmons is going to come after you with his big, long tongue. Yeah.
Going to lick you for Nancy's
leg. He's going to lick you to bits. But you might like that one, Tom.
Good old Genie.
Good old Mr. Simmons, here he comes with a big tongue.
Well, you know, guys, Mr. Simmons actually sent us a congratulatory message for our 50th episode.
He did?
That's true.
Oh, yes.
It's true. It was actually the world's one of the world's best Gene Simmons impersonators. But all right. Well, that's great. Well, okay, so that's...
Oh, my God.
This show will be fun to edit.
Yes. Oh!
I hope...
Time for Look Away again?
All right. Well, let's have a musical
interlude.
Let's play a little bit of Ships.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Nice.
1, 2, 3, 4. Thank you.
Fantastic.
And there was much. And there was much rejoicing.
Yes, much rejoicing. Wow, even on the crappy Skype connection, that sounds beautiful.
Sorry, Tom, I've just got to go and give Sandra her car keys. Just one second.
Oh, no problem. No problem. Okay, so that was Seven Swords, and Svein and I aren't used to going so quickly on songs. I mean, we spend like 4 hours on the first verse of one big country song, so we're going to fly through these. So the next one was The River Stays the Same, and this was one, again, that Bruce sent the demo for, and I always really liked this song a lot, and I remember hearing the version that Bruce and Jamie did, and really the only thing I added to this, I didn't write anything for this one. I just thought, you know, let's try to make it sound sonically similar to, to Seven Swords. I keep wanting to say Seven Waves. Seven Swords. And so we took it from there.
Spoken words on lonely hills, the swallows fly and souls to mend. A man is not a man to stays the same, but we're just sailing through the night. I'm waiting for the sun, the voices tell me it's alright. Franklin came from Hilltop, 19 years of age. Signed up for the army just to get a wage. Stationed on an island far away from home, silence with a gun. The river stays the same, and we're sailing. The river stays the same, when we're walking with you. And in the deadly sway, it's man versus man. The river stays the same, but we're just sailing through the night. I'm waiting for the song, the voices tell me that it's time. Johnny, join me, baby, just to get away.
Stays the same, always.
Bruce, talk a little bit about this song. And I mean, I know that this has been kicking around your repertoire for a while. And
Kind of when Jimmy and I were messing about on the Porter studio, I think it was around the time Jimmy was just starting to learn recording techniques, and I got the old Porter studio down from the attic. And when we started writing the album, another album for the Damned, that song kind of sprung out in that period. We just called it, you know, the Porter Studio Diaries, because that's what it was. And I seem to remember we rehearsed it with Big Country as well when Mike was in the band, and that was kind of in line for being on the Journey album. But we had enough songs anyway, and I think we had about 12 songs, and it was just, you know, we're running out of time, so we actually never ended up recording it with Big Country. But I always knew it had potential, and it just I just knew that it needed an extra bit in there. That's why I put the second half of the verses has got that kind of almost heavy thing, and then it leads into new rearrangement of the chorus, which is, you know, it's no new rearrangement of the verse, which is real heavy kind of Jay stuff.
Good. Yeah, that's...
Mum's away, let's jump on the couch. Let's jump on the couch. The bean is dead. She's... Sandra, just have to do the shopping.
Times like this, I really wish I had the video going. I would love to see that.
That could be the next one. We'll have to film our own film reactions.
Yeah, I mean, I really love this song. And you know, the chorus is such a grabber right away, too. And... yeah, this is a good example, you know, of just the way we worked. I mean, again, I felt good after the seven swords about how things were going, so I felt better, a little more confident about putting these things together and sending it to you. And just this is just an example, you know. I remember sending the first mix back after you guys had submitted your parts, and this is sort of how we did things. Bruce actually was a big part of mixing this too, because he would have great ideas about, you know. I learned a lot from you, Bruce, with some of the ideas about bringing something new in each section you know, doubling things, which I had done before, but I liked how you guys were doubling your guitars and your vocals. And I remember, yeah, because Jamie had done the solo, and I put like this really big giant phaser on his solo.
Yeah.
And Bruce was...
Yeah, Jamie loved that, didn't you?
Yeah, that was awesome. Thanks for that.
Help
Tommy
take the bloody
face
off my guitar.
No, to be fair, I like it as well, because in some of the songs as well, you've been adding extra harmonies to my guitar parts, which has been great, because it's saved me having to fucking do it.
Right, right.
Which has been
lazy.
Awesome.
Lazy.
Laziness. No, it was one of those things. Again, when you're working on tracks, it's how far can I take this? And you can layer, as I say, layering vocals and guitars. You could be there all day.
Yeah.
Layering it and really sometimes it doesn't always need it, but I must say that the bits you've been adding to my guitar it's been awesome. I've really enjoyed hearing it.
Oh, that's great.
And it blends really well, I think. So yeah, thanks for that.
Oh, definitely.
Oh, that's great. Thank you. Yeah, and you know, like I said before, it just feels like a natural thing for me. I do that with my own stuff, and of course I learned it from the best from you guys. So
I always believe that when you're recording a song, I always like the listener to hear something new every time a verse comes around or a bridge comes around or a chorus. It's always nice just to, you know, so it's not like a copy and paste job. It's, you know, there is a certain amount of liveness in there. Mm. So if you put something new in every time, it's, you know, especially if the listener's got headphones on, it might be subliminal, but it's just enough to make them keep their interest, as it were.
Yeah, one of the things that really I loved about this song was when you guys did the wah chant.
I put that in because that verse was about Ira, you know, the Indian, and I just kind of thought, had in my head this sort of Indian chant, and it's probably not, but I just kind of...
It's like tribalness.
Yeah, I just thought, let's get that in. It kind of works. It's mad.
It really worked great. And especially at the end when it just ends with that, I think that's really a good way to end the song.
Yeah.
It's pretty powerful.
Because it sounds like it's a sample or a synthesized sample. It's not. It's organic. It's just basically I'm doing the low register and Jamie's up there doing his falsetto stuff, you know? And it's just a mad blend. You know, it's just something for the listener, something new for the listener to hear, you know?
Oh, it's great. It's great. And the only thing I did to that track was I took one of your lines, Bruce, when you did the low wah, and I copied it, and then I brought it down another octave. So
that's right, yeah.
So that I wasn't sure how that would work, but it gave it an even deeper, more resonant.
Yes, that's right. Down there in the mud, isn't it? That one.
Yeah, so you got an even lower range than you thought.
Yeah, I could do it live right now.
I'm your father.
I'm your father, Luke.
Bruce, do you want to talk at all about the lyrics to that song? Because definitely, you know, pretty poignant.
Yeah,
poignant.
I've
song.
Been, yeah, yeah, I was watching the Clint Eastwood films, Flags of Our Fathers, you know.
Oh, yeah, great movies.
It was basically about kind of the characters that were in that. It kind of reminded me a bit like being a rock band. They put these guys out in the road, I think it was to sell war bonds, you know. And, you know, they came back from Iwo Jima and stuff like that, and they were just so messed up. And I just thought the way they were on the road, it kind of reminded me, like, just like I say, being in a rock band, you know.
Yeah, oh, that's great. That's very interesting. That's very interesting to me that you bring up those Clint Eastwood movies, because Letters from Iwo Jima is the other one. Kind of, I don't know if you saw that one too. That goes along with.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah.
Yeah, great stuff. Oh, that's great.
The two films obviously are about like different sides, as it were. You know, different interpretations. So I must get those movies out again. I love Clint Eastwood movies.
Yeah, me too.
The genius.
Me too. Get off my lawn.
Get off my lawn.
So Spine, John, I hate putting you guys on the spot since we're sitting right here. Only heaps of praise are permitted. No, you can say anything you want about these songs, but just curious what you guys thought, and especially if you heard the Bruce and Jamie versions, if you like the electric reworking.
Actually, this is the one I didn't get any previous demos for, I think.
Oh, really? Okay.
So I have that for both of the others. But what strikes me about this song is that this seems to be the one that is placed sort of stylistically in the middle of the three songs, where Seven Swords is perhaps the more rockier, a little bit punk-edged song. And the last song that we've yet to talk about is the out-and-out lovely ballad. And then you have this kind of more melodic thing in the middle. So I think good diverse selection, really.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, I mean, Seven Swords is kind of the look away of the bunch, Spine, you know. That's the one that sucks you in.
God, you.
And spits you out.
Yeah, and then you get into other songs, and you've got to sort of listen a bit more.
Fantastic. Okay, so that was The River Stays the Same, and that brings us to the final song on our EP here, which, by the way, is called WKW, Hands Across the Ocean. I suppose I should have mentioned that 5 hours ago, but and we're going to give you guys the links and everything else to where you can listen to these and download these and purchase these if you so choose. So the last song is called Rose Red Sunset. So why don't we just play that first, and then we'll come back and talk about it.
Spirit far behind among your tears, but no false promise. as quick and sore. In a sea of mud, I drown my dreams and burst the power of the lies. And I walk the barren path of yesterdays with memories of the panic sighs. And all I needed was a rose with sunset.
Okay, so that song really has all kinds of interesting history to it, and just to lead into you guys talking more about this, that came from this great instrumental that Bruce and Jamie recorded and posted on the Big Country sites a while back, and I think everyone was really, myself included, was really taken by that instrumental piece because it was so beautiful, number one, but also it really took a lot of us back to that spirit of Big Country that we all love so much. So Bruce, why don't you talk a little bit about like the genesis of that, what happened with that song, because it sort of became another song before it became Rose Red Sunset. And
well, it kind of started off, it was actually nothing to do with me, it was Jamie had written an instrumental piece of music, and again we were up in the attic, a place we don't go much these days because it's full of Christmas trees and crap. it was just Jamie had this idea. So he played all the guitar. He wrote it all and put all the guitars on it. And
wow.
I think I added the Ebo bit and maybe a little lead line, and that kind of engineered it. So it was basically Jamie's song. You want to talk about that, young master James?
Yeah, well, again, it was, we'd been writing together, but we were sort of trying to think, we weren't thinking about recording to go out as a touring sort of band or an outfit as such. So it was kind of, it was music that was basically going to be written for soundtracks, really. But again, we just got around to recording it, and eventually we took it into the sort of studio. We tried it with Big Country as well for a while, and the song just sort of took a, Simon added some lyrics to it, obviously, and we ended up not getting around to really releasing it. So the song sort of sat on the shelf for a while, to be honest. And once we got involved with you, we sort of just revamped it, really. Yeah, it seems to have worked really well, you know.
We recorded it with the guys in the band. But I just kind of thought, you know, it was okay. I think because it was written originally as an instrumental, like as Jimmy said, a soundtrack idea. It was like almost like music for an imaginary movie kind of thing, you know. And I think when we got into the studio and tried to make it a band song, it didn't kind of work. You know, some things work, some things don't. But when you took it, it was like, again, Tom, you've got free rein.
Fresh ears as well.
You know, yeah. Complete fresh ears, and just, you know, let me hear your take on it. And I think what you did made the song come alive. You kind of rescued it from being a little obscure soundtrack piece,
yeah,
into something quite new, and it doesn't sound anything like the way we did it with the band, you know.
Yeah, oh, that's great. I appreciate that. I mean, you know, for me, Jamie's melody there and everything else made that easy, because just to let the people listening know, what I basically did on this one was write lyrics for the song, and and a little tiny bridge part, but the rest was, you know, all you guys. And yeah, I mean, and the song that we were talking about is All Laid Down, and it's a song that I always like too. But taking it from that instrumental piece, I just thought that, from my own perspective, I thought that melody was so beautiful, that lead melody, that worked great as a vocal melody. So I don't think that was the case in the other version. So I just kind of took that and turned that into, you know, the lyrics.
Yeah, you just needed fresh ears, that's all, and you know, you came in and did that, and it was like, at first I'm like, what's this going to be like, because there was another version obviously out there, All Laid Down, and it's like, I'm hoping that's not going to influence Tom too much, you know. And it was, you just went completely left field with it. It's nothing like it, apart from obviously Jamie's original sort of plan, you know. So it's worked great. I'm really, really, really pleased with it. It's a great song.
I think so too. I think it's just a really great song. I hope people will like it.
And now I will interject and say that this is my favorite song of the three songs. I think it's lovely. It's really beautiful. And I think I really liked the All Laid Down song. But the problem with that I had is, I think the original idea was so strong, and it was underutilized on All Laid Down. It disappears a bit in the song, whereas Rose Red Sunset really puts it front and center, and that's exactly where it should be.
I completely agree with what you said there, Swain, actually. You nailed it on the head completely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree too. And like I said, it was that melody line that really captured me. So Jamie, just to ask you, because I've always wanted to ask you this, because I don't get you on the show that often. So, I mean, you've got that. You've got such a natural, you know, feel and ear for that kind of big country sound, you know. And I didn't even realize until just now, talking with Bruce, that was completely from you. So I mean, you know, how do you look back at being a younger person, for all of us old geezers? how do you view that, the old big country catalog? I mean, do you view it as something that influences your own tastes as they're happening now? Do you look at it as kind of like, well, this is where what we're doing springs from, so I need to learn this, or is it something that actually, you know, influences the way you write and the way you listen to music?
It's definitely influenced me, and I've always grown up loving Big Country. I mean, I always used to remember when Dad would be on tour with the guys, and he would come home and he'd have like the latest album or recording that they'd been doing, and the first thing I would do is go upstairs in my bedroom and chuck it straight in the CD player, you know. So yeah, I've always loved, and especially all the rarity stuff. That's where I find a lot of the hidden gems are as well. Like the demos as well. You know, that you can get a song and you can go and over like produce it like so much in a studio. But I'm kind of like that as well. There's a lot of hidden gems in the B sides and stuff like that. So that's I've always liked it. If it's Tom Petty, Big Country, or Nils Lofgren, you know, I'm pretty much in.
That's great.
Yeah, talk about hidden gems as well, Jamie. There's a, I always thought one of the hidden gems on was a song called "Trouble Man" that Stuart wrote.
Yes,
and
yeah.
I think we should maybe take a look at that, Tom, just see if we can do something with it. You know, it's just like I say, it was hidden away. I think it needs to be brought to the front. I think
That's great. Yeah, I think I agree completely. That would be fantastic to do a recording of that.
Let's get the thinking cap on then, I think, and take a look at that one.
I've also been working on a cover version, Tom, of Crazy Horses. So I'll have to send it over to you soon.
Give us a blast of Crazy Horses.
You need some drum programming done for that.
Okay, I'm your man.
You're the man.
Yeah, we're going to get Gene Simmons in to produce it as well.
That's awesome. Oh, that's great. Yeah, I mean, you know, I love this song too, and I gotta say it's my favorite as well, just because it's so it builds so nicely, and it hits a pretty giant crescendo at the end, and it's got so many interesting sounds in it, and you know the Ebo from Bruce, and
yeah,
you know, it's very cool, and I was for myself, I was personally pleased with like a sound I was able to get. That everybody thinks is a keyboard, but it's not. It's like that opening. It's actually a guitar, but it's I stumbled on this little type effect where I got, maybe people have done this before. I'm sure they have, but
a tremolo, like a tremolo vibrato thing. Is that the one?
Well, it's got that too, but it's like I used a reverb effect where the only sound it's sort of a fade up. It fades up the guitar part that you're playing, but it also only plays the wet portion of the reverb. So it like doesn't play any of the dry part of the guitar, so it's got this beautiful like keyboard sound.
Yeah, because I thought it was a keyboard at first, and I think when I emailed you, I said, God, I want to hear more of that keyboard. That's like, that's not a keyboard. How dare you? That's my guitar.
That's right. I had to get that out there.
People think Big Country were averse to using keyboards, so you know that was never the case. It's just that we wanted to do different guitar sounds. You know, it's none of us are natural keyboard player, but I think Tony can play a bit of keyboards. You know, so
oh yeah, definitely. And the Ebo stuff is I just remember getting. I think I posted something like, "It's always a good day when you get Ebo files sent to you by email by Bruce Watson."
It's kind of weird that even me doing the skid stuff, I put a load of Evo on some of the skid stuff, and when I'm doing my recordings, there's loads of Evo. I always like to put loads of Evo on my recordings, but live, I can't be bothered.
He's lazy.
they're so. I mean, the Evo's great, but they can be inconsistent at times live. They can just decide to fail on you, you know, just and then. And I always remember before, there was one time when. We were doing the song, and Stuart was getting ready to do the big Evo intro, and he did it, and then what he did was he usually put the Evo on Mark's drum riser when he finished using it, but this time there was a pint of orange juice. He dropped the Evo into a pint of orange juice. He couldn't use it for the next couple of nights until we could find a shop and buy one, you know?
Oh my gosh, that's hilarious. Yeah, they're a pain. It would lie. You have to walk back and get it and then play it. And yeah.
They're great when they work. They're great in the studio, but I mean, live when they work as well, but just sometimes they decide to, you know, the grey ones creep in and I'm not going to work, and it's like your big moment.
Yeah.
And it's just, right. Die, shit!
I know. Oh. You gotta find that hot spot where it works great, or else it's like all the shrieking.
Yeah,
and yeah, that's fantastic. Well, so that's Rose Red Sunset. That's our EP. And I guess the last thing to talk about is we actually even managed to put together a video for this. And that was for Seven Swords, which you guys, you know, may have seen by now too. But that was a lot of fun. I mean, I didn't know how that would work because I'm here. No, I'm here in America. I don't know what's going on.
So you're in America, we were in Japan, and then ended up going to Liverpool, and it was just basically for us, it was get the GoPro out. So Jamie and I have a GoPro each, and they're great because you can just hang them around your neck and nobody knows what you're doing half the time. Eh? So basically, just having fun with a GoPro, and obviously, you were green screen, so
yeah, I shot myself here on the green screen, and so I had to like constantly. The camera I was using, I have to constantly make sure it's in focus. So I'm like running back and checking it and putting stand-in props in front of it to make sure that's in focus. And yeah, so I shot stuff on green screen and sent it to you guys. And Liam did a great job with all that stuff. And
Liam was great. You know, he's got the studio under the old sound control. And he's done up really well. We're going to be mixing some of the skid stuff there, acoustic. And it was just basically, it was like, hold on a minute, how are we going to do this? Because it sounds like a band. I mean, Seven Swords, it sounds like, as you say, like a punk rock band, you know, and like The Clash or something. It's like, well, how can we perform this? Tom's in America, and we need a drummer, we need a bass player. So basically, we had George and another guy called Rory, not our Rory, but another guy called Rory playing the bass and drums for us. And they just happened to be in the studio at the time. And we went down in the van and we had the old clown with the Clown and Wolfman masks in the back of the van. And I was, well, wait a minute, we don't want to see your faces, guys. So we'll wear the masks. And they were well up for it. So it kind of grew out of just like a Watson telly sketch. It was fun.
It was great. It was so much fun.
And then obviously you come out the green screen. It just looks a bit obviously different because the lighting is different and you're not interacting with us. So the way around it was to make you almost like Princess Leia in Star Wars. And make you that little hologram.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of effect we put on you. And we were out driving, we were on tour, and Gordon was driving us, and I was mucking about with my phone in the front, and I saw a DeLorean on the back of this lorry. And it actually was the Back to the Future DeLorean.
Yeah, Marty McFly style.
Oh, man. That was such a cool shot when I saw that. I thought, oh, that is cool.
The world's greatest time machine's broken down. It's on the back of a flatbed lorry. I've got to get this in the video. You know, Gordon, drive past it. You know, and I got it. You know, it's just a little iPhone shot. And then we went after Japan. We were in Liverpool, so we went down to Strawberry Fields. The middle shot where Jamie's walking through the graveyard. That's actually the graveyard that Eleanor Rigby's gravestones in there, but obviously we couldn't get right up to it, otherwise we'd be walking on other people's graves. But that is a cemetery where Eleanor Rigby was buried.
Oh, that's great. And I saw some of your pictures that you guys posted of that stuff too. And that's my favorite shot in the whole video is when Jamie's walking
through. Yeah, I love that shot. It's brilliant. It's a great shot.
Really great. And just the breakdown part of the song behind it, it just works. Yeah. It just works nice.
Yeah, yeah.
So the thing is, I want to do a video for every song, so I don't know how we're going to do it, you know.
Camera at the ready, Tom. Camera at the ready.
I'm afraid you're going to be green screened forever, you know.
Mr. Green.
Mr. Green Jeans.
So I'll get an idea for that. I don't know, maybe I'll get one of our two songs and see if we get a video for that as well. I mean, that's the way it is nowadays. People want to hear stuff online, they want to see things online.
Right, exactly.
Originally, that video was going to be like a straight performance thing, and I watched it back, and it just didn't work as a straight performance. It's, you know, it's been done so many times, that everyone's done a straight performance video, and it never looks right. I think you've got to have a little bit of a story, a bit of fun in there, you know, just so people can keep going back and watching it again, you know.
Oh, yeah. And The Clown and the Wolfman, I mean, how perfect. People will get a kick out of that. You understand what that is referencing. So.
Yeah, it's only big country fans that really get the Clown and the Wolfman thing with the masks, you know, so the whole rest of Snape's thing. So it's always good to bring those characters out when you're stuck.
and they look, those masks look more evil now, you know.
Yeah, they do.
But they did a good job copping those parts. They seemed believable. They were one of the close ups of the bass player. I was like, he's playing the right he's playing the right notes there. That's great.
He's a he's a great bass player, John. So,
yeah.
You know, it's just it was kind of underselling those guys because they were really good.
Yeah, they're good musicians.
They didn't even be the band. They would be the band, the KW band.
Oh, that's fantastic. And John pointed out too, something I noticed after viewing the video, you know, a few times, but we've also got a cameo from Scott Whitley in that video.
Yeah, I forgot about that. And Rory's in there too. It's just that was out in the streets of Tokyo.
That's right.
Again, it was just like, Jamie, get the GoPro out, spin round, walk up and down the street, you know.
Oh, it's great.
And
stuff.
Scott just happened to be there, you know.
I mean, there was lots of footage. I mean, it's a shame we were going to use the toilet scene in Japan, but it didn't really work.
What, the toilet or the scene?
Both.
Oh, that's scary. We'll save that for Rose Red Sunset. That would be perfect. Bruce, as I was saying to you the other day, I don't know if Jamie's heard this, but we now have just about hit 600,000 total downloads of this show since we started.
That's absolutely amazing.
That's brilliant, man.
Nuts.
So I mean, and that you know, that speaks a lot more to you guys than it does to us. So you know,
it's just amazing. I mean, Big Country were never the biggest band in the world, but you know, we've got a great fan base. The fan base is absolutely amazing, and for people to sit and download and listen to all those podcasts. How many podcasts did you say?
This is number 78.
Wow.
Jeez. You crazy people, you crazy.
And so I guess, you know, in closing with this whole topic, we should let people know, you know, I'm figuring it out too, and I know you guys are too. Like, how can we get this if we want it? Well, right now we've got a Bandcamp page, which is the Bruce and Jamie Watson Bandcamp page that we just put together. And right now the album that's on there, or the EP, is the WKW EP. And also, I don't want to let this go by without mentioning Tim Eldred, who...
Oh, yeah, yeah, Tim.
Yeah, I mean, if you guys check out the cover art for this, I mean, I think we all agree that it just turned out spectacular. And Tim Eldred did this, and you guys might recognize that name. He's been a guest in the past on the show as part of some of our roundtable shows that we've done. And Tim is actually an artist and for Marvel, the Marvel Comics, and he directs some of the cartoons that are produced nationally here. So he's kind of a big deal.
Yeah,
he sure is.
And he's also a huge Big Country fan. So, you know, Tim actually generously agreed to just do this art for us. And a lot of it came from an idea that Bruce had. So, Bruce, you want to, as we close talking about this, you want to talk a little bit about that idea you had?
Yeah, well, kind of originally, when you told me that Tim was an illustrator for Marvel, I kind of thought, we could all get done up like superheroes.
Right.
Tom flying through the air with a cape and all that kind of stuff. And then he came back and went, that's incredibly stupid, you know. We're going to do it my way. We're going to have four guitars coming out of the ocean with hands around them. A little fishing boat that looks like something out of the Perfect Storm, you know.
Right, right.
But it was so completely different from the idea I had in my head. But it was great because it's like sending you a file or sending you stuff. It's like a gem, an idea, and then you take it somewhere completely different. And that's what Tim did. And it was just, the minute I saw it, I just went, what a great album sleeve that would make,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, I know.
And you can tell he's sketch. I saw the original sketch, and it was all done by hand. It's not like it was like going into Photoshop and just, you know, creating like that, you know? It was actually done by hand first, you know?
I know.
So, what a genius.
I know, it's fantastic. It's fantastic. And it's funny because there are four. The one thing we talked about, there are four arms.
Yeah, Sean swayed up, didn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, and we said, you know what? That's true. That might confuse people because there's just three of us, really. But and so I asked Tim, I was like, is there any way you could maybe make it three, thinking it would be just an easy thing? But he said, you know, if I do that, I'm going to have to recolor everything. I'm going to have to redo all this. And I said, but we're paying you a king's ransom. surely you would do whatever we ask. but we wanted to spare him a little bit of that extra work. So I said, you know what? Just keep it four. People can wonder about the fourth.
Keep it four, yeah. Now you know who the fourth member is. It's actually Tim.
That's right. There you go. Yes, it could be Tim. That's exactly right. So anyway, so people can find this music on the Bandcamp site for now, and we'll give that address out on the site.
Lovely.
And if I don't, because I don't have it in front of me at the moment, which I should, but if you just go to bandcamp.com.
Laziness.
I know, pathetic. Go to bandcamp.com and search for Bruce and Jamie Watson, and you will find it.
There will obviously be a link on the bruceandjamiewatson.com site.
Ooh,
yeah,
definitely
covered.
And we'll be sharing it with all the big country pages. And I mean, we've been talking about, you know, working on the future and maybe getting this on iTunes and some of the other things too. So hopefully we'll get it out there in all the digital platforms that people can get it. But for now, it's a Bandcamp thing, and the video is on YouTube, and so all those links should be readily available by the time you hear this.
Oh, fantastic.
So, I mean, all I can say in closing with this is, you know, thank you so much, Bruce and Jamie. I mean, for allowing me to work on this, and it's been amazing.
No, you've been great.
Well, thanks.
Absolutely. We've been an absolute ball. It's like every, because of our touring schedule, you know, it's like we're always away at the weekends, and we get home on a Sunday night, and then Monday, basically, I lie in bed all day to recover. And your files would usually arrive, when I'm back, and it's always like a Tuesday, so... It's like, right, Jamie, Tom's files are arriving. Let's get in the studio, which is basically my living room with a laptop. So it's always a pleasant surprise on the Tuesday to get the files through and see what you've done, and then just take it a little bit further and then fire it back to you. And then, you know, and it's a pleasant surprise the following Tuesday when the mix comes back. But, that's why it's taken us a bit of time, just because like our work schedule and, of course, your work schedule. But it's a labour of love. And, you know, as long as we get that one day a week being creative in our little studio environments on both sides of the ocean, then, you know, long may it continue. It's going to be great fun.
I think so, too. And, you know, when people hear this, it's going to be brand new to them because we've really kept it quiet. So even though we've been working on this for some months, you know, to them it'll be like a shock, or, you know, hopefully a good shock.
Hopefully a pleasant shock, yes.
And I'm looking very much forward to getting my first abuse from people in the big country camp.
Yeah, I mean,
who is this idiot that you've got working with?
Yes, that's the downside, I suppose. But hey ho, everyone's got opinions, haven't they?
That's right.
Everyone's an expert.
Tom, you suck. But it's great.
Fine, you're so positive.
So it's fine. Any last comments on anything, you know, you want to ask on this?
These guys suck. They suck like hell.
Yeah.
I think
well, they're getting fired.
You don't sing about fire in any of your songs.
Well, that might yet come, I suppose. No, I guess like you guys, I'm really excited to see what people will think. I think this is good stuff. I look forward to the album that you have said this will eventually become.
Hopefully,
I assume you will just keep up the work rhythm until you get there.
Yeah, we're just going to keep chipping away at it. Like I say, we've got busy, heavy schedules, so. It's, you know, we've got an idea of the next couple of songs. There's another song called Smolder that's in the background at the moment, which kind of started off as another idea that I had, and Tom took it a little bit further. So that's going to be one of the next songs we'll be working on. And then hopefully a couple of little surprises in there. And like I say, we'll just keep chipping away.
Yeah, exactly.
Wonderful.
I can't wait. It's awesome. It's awesome.
Crazy horses.
Crazy horses.
Send that to me, Jamie. I'll put the drum tracks on it.
Nice.
I'll put the sitar on it.
We need Gene Simmons. We want Gene Simmons to go, wah, wah. Crazy. Let's do it right now. What is it? Wah, wah. I'm Gene Simmons from Kiss. Wah, wah. Oh,
smoking up the skies. Hey, Gene Simmons' orchestra coming in. He's going, wah, wah. Go, Gene, go, Gene. Crazy horses, wow, wow. Crazy Watsons, wow. Gene Simmons is coming to my door. There you go. Some spontaneous shout from the Watsons.
Wow! Oh man, where were those screams on the tracks that we did? You got to get those screams going. Well, guys, we're gonna let you go here in just a minute here, but we just wanted to ask you if we could just a little bit about general Big Country stuff. Is that okay? We just asked you some, like what you're doing now and the skids thing that you've been talking about, and so. So, I mean,
I'd like to lead off with a question.
Yeah, go ahead. It's fine.
Yeah. All right. So just for some general follow up, we discussed this in the previous episode of the podcast, and I have to follow up with you guys. And that is your performance at the Full Metal Cruise. Kind of paid tribute to that a bit last episode, and we even put in a metal version of In the Big Country. we really want to hear your perspectives. How did it go, and also how did you get booked for that event?
The booking of the event just came through our agent, and then I didn't think much about it, and then I looked at the bill and I kind of thought, wait a minute, this is extreme heavy metal. It's almost, some of the bands are like death metal, and I thought, are we going to go down like a lead balloon? And it actually worked out great. I mean, they were really, really into it, you know. Some of those German bands I've never heard of before. The only band that I knew of was Rose Tattoo from Australia. And they were absolutely amazing.
Yeah, they were good.
What I'd never ever heard of their stuff before. I just recognised them, you know, I recognised the name. So we went down to watch them, and I was completely blown away by Rose Tattoo. But regarding it just seems to be the way things are going these days, because rock and roll is getting older, and everybody's fans, I think, you know, the mosh pit thing is almost like a lot of people don't want to go there, you know, and it's, people want their creature comfort. So a lot of the bands are doing like cruises and with, you know, the holiday camp kind of thing, because, yeah, you know, people, it's almost like everything under one roof. You don't have to travel. You can be on the boat, or you can be at the holiday camp, or, you know, 3 or 4 nights and see your favourite bands, and then just toddle along to your cabin or your chalet or whatever, you know. We've done a couple of cruises now, and really it's just different, but really enjoyable as well. But like I say, I think we were probably on the wrong bill, although we went down great.
But I knew you would.
I mean, it was mainly German people and a lot of Scandinavian people, and seriously into their heavy rock. You know, everybody had like the denim jackets on with the patches and Viking helmets. You know, you could probably... You know,
that's what Svein's wearing right now.
You get to that, Svein, yeah. it was interesting, and it was just something different, you know. But we had a great time, and the people, probably not Big Country fans, just fans of heavy rock in general, and they really liked it. So
that's incredible. What about Battle Beast? What were your impressions of the band Battle Beast?
Is that a made up name? You made up.
I just saw that name on the bill and it made me laugh. Battle Beast.
To be honest with you, I don't think I could even pronounce the names of the bands that are on the bill. There's a lot of M's and X's and stuff like that. But Rose Tattoo, check them out on YouTube. You know, absolutely fantastic band. You can see why the singer was kind of in the line for AC/DC, you know, after Bon Scott passed away. He's just got that kind of voice, you know.
Oh, fantastic. I'll have to check that out. What about the set list that you put together for that show? Did you make any different, you know, changes? Or were there any songs that you thought, you know, we're not going to play that?
Yeah, obviously we didn't play Ships. but we kind of chucked in a few of the Steel Town songs because they're kind of up-tempo and... in your face heavy anyway. We didn't heavy it up or anything like that, but we just thought, you know, we're not going to play too many ballads. You know, we've got to be a bit more up-tempo, you know. But I think, you know, people, I mean, even the way we do Look Away, it's kind of, it's a lot heavier than the way it was recorded. The recording of Look Away is almost like pop kind of mix, you know, whereas Look Away, when we do it live, it's kind of a bit heavier anyway. So it's the same within a big country. It's you know, on record, it was all done with clean guitars. And the way we've always performed it, even with the original lineup, it was always heavier, you know what I mean? So we did actually tailor the way we played, but we just changed the set, and it was only like a 45-minute set anyway, so you've got to, you're kind of limiting what you do.
Right, right. Well, it's like I said this on the show that we did last when we were talking about this, I have a lot of friends who are, you know, when I grew up and was in college especially, who were into that kind of stuff predominantly.
Yeah. But
I've always played big country music to them, and I've never had one person, you know, not react favorably to you guys, even if they, you know, they always pick up on that guitar and the power of it. And even if it's not, you know, as distorted as they would prefer, they always respect you guys at the very least. So I knew you would go over well.
Yeah, because we can play a bit, you know. But I think that was always the thing with big country. It's, you know, our records are kind of more commercial and pop sounded, more of a pop kind of production, just because commercialism, you know, and the way we play live is a different kettle of fish altogether, you know. It's kind of weird. We're kind of like too heavy to be on an 80s package, but we're too light to be in a heavy metal package, you know.
Well, you did okay. I actually saw an update from Scott Whitley where he said you didn't change who you were, but you did perhaps power up the riffs a little bit.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. And I saw actually three video clips from that cruise, and one of them was you playing Chance. It sounded phenomenal, but I've never heard you riff so much to that song before.
And also when we were out in Germany previous to that, we ended up doing a couple of festivals, and they were basically heavy rock festivals, you know, which is great, because when you go out to Germany and Scandinavia, I mean, heavy rock is huge out there, you know. It is massive.
Yep.
So we'd kind of been in that mode anyway for a few days beforehand, playing at these rock festivals. When I say heavy rock, it's the kind of festivals that, say, Nazareth would do, or Deep Purple, not your Hollywood kind of heavy rock, you know. Not like Motley Crue kind of rock, you know, but more blues-based.
Right, yeah, that's the perfect distinction. And just the last question I have about that show, did you actually get any sing-along with Chance going at that show?
We did a lot of it, yeah.
I would love to have seen that. Oh my gosh.
Because we did two sets.
Yeah.
And the first time we did it, we thought, they're never going to do a sing-along. And we just kind of omitted that and just went right to the power chord. And then the second time, we're on stage at midnight and people were like a bit more looser, shall we say. And so we just broke it down, and they actually went for it. They did the sing-along bit, which was great.
That's fantastic. That's great. I just was curious about that visual.
Yeah. I saw that photo, by the way, of you playing in front of that pool, and that's got to be one of the most surrealistic pictures I've ever seen of big country.
Yeah, I know, you put on the top deck, a ship, a luxury cruise liner, and you're playing just in front of the swimming pool with all these mad Scandinavians and Germans just with their Viking helmets diving into the pool.
I don't know, we've played on top of haystacks before, that was quite surreal.
Oh yeah, maybe we played anywhere.
Haystacks.
Oh. Yeah, that was pretty fucked up.
Yeah, we did that American tour, 6 years ago, we ended up playing in the back of a flatbed lorry that was done out in haystacks, like a farmyard scene.
Yeah, I remember that, because I started jumping about on the stage, and Mark's drums started falling apart. That was brilliant.
Oh, man. Well, the other big shows that you guys did was, of course, Japan. And what was that experience like, going back to Japan after, you know, for you, Bruce, for it had been 83, yeah, right, since you'd been there?
Yeah, Japan was just amazing. It's just fantastic, you know, the opportunity that we've got to travel. Audience-wise, it's very much like playing in a Hard Rock Cafe. It's like the people buy the tickets, but included in that ticket prices, you get the band in front of you, but you sit down and have your dinner while watching the band. we were doing like two 70-minute sets, I think. So you would do a show in the afternoon and then come off and get your dinner, whatever, and have a break, and then come back on at 9 o'clock at night and do the same show to different people. So it was just so strange walking on stage and everyone's sitting down having their dinner. You kind of always felt like you were interrupting them, you know. but after, you know, two or three songs, they get up and they start just like a normal gig.
Yeah, once the food settled, it was great.
Right, well, once they've had their dinner and a wee toilet break, then they're back to normal. But Japan was amazing. It was six shows in 3 days. A day to get there, and we had a day off in the middle, and obviously a travel day back. So we were in Tokyo and Osaka, and it was just great. You know, when we go abroad, we're like tourists. You know, we're out in the streets with the cameras, and you know, just soaking up. I mean, I just love traveling anyway. I hate getting there. I hate the flight. same when I go to America. I just hate doing that flight thing, but. But once I'm there at the New York airport and John picks me up, that's me, I'm in heaven.
That's great. Good job, John.
Well done, John.
Thank you very much.
Oh, man. Okay, so guys, last thing I wanted to ask you about, and Svi might have something else to jump in here too, but the skid stuff that you've been talking about, the acoustic stuff with the skids, can you talk a little bit about what that is and what's the current state of the skids? Are you planning more shows?
There's still more shows. There's been shows booked for ages. So basically, we've done a few shows where Richard's been asked to perform at like an art centre. We've got an art centre in Dunfermline called the Fire Station. It actually was an old fire station. But you couldn't do a full blown skids loud guitar show in a place like that. So it's always been like an audience for Richard kind of thing, where people would ask, it would be like a questions and answer kind of thing from the audience, and then we'd play some songs acoustically, just do acoustic versions, like songs like Into the Valley and Saints Are Coming. So we've got a few shows done, so we're basically I'm just mixing them this week, and also there was a free download thing for the Pledge people for the Burning Cities album, where we got three acoustic tracks, and we went into Rory's studio and we re-recorded some sketch songs acoustically. So I think they're online anyway, like The Saints Are Coming, The Valley and Fields, we did them. So there's a few songs lying about with the skids that just need a few overdubs and some mixing done. And regarding the touring, I think we've got some dates in December. There's a double header thing with obviously BC and Skids in December, and then January and February there's dates, and I think we finish up with the Skids round about July. Then we're doing that, I think it's July anyway, we're doing a gig with the Buzzcocks and Penetration down at the Royal Albert Hall in London, and then so we'll probably finish on a high there, and then just park it up for a little while. Maybe I just thought about maybe doing some acoustic shows next year as well. So there'll be festivals. I think the skids have got. There'll be a few festivals that we'll do. But after that, we're going to park it up for a while, I think. And then that obviously gives us more time to do more Hands Across the Ocean.
Yeah, great. Well, that works for me. But I love hearing the skids stuff too. So that's fantastic.
Yeah, it's good stuff. It's just good fun. You know, it's just we get to. It's similar to my company, but not. You know what I mean? But it's good to get a wee break and go out and do that stuff. But it was never going to last forever anyway. You know, but I think what Skids have achieved, especially bringing out a new album and you know having youth produce that album, it's just been great fun. You know.
And I saw too that you had an old buddy appear at a recent show. I saw some pictures of Tony.
Tony turned up in his sunshine. We were down in Exeter about 2 weeks ago. And we didn't hook up for ages. And I thought, Exeter, that's got to be close to where Tony lives. And I looked at the old map and it worked out. It was about 30 miles away kind of thing. So I just got in the blower and got along to the sound check. And we just sat in a good old natter in the dressing room and introduced him to Simon and Scott, and they got in like a house on fire.
That's great. I just saw him post something this morning, and he talked about that and said those are fine fellows, Simon and Scott.
Oh, nice.
So good. That was great to see from a fan perspective. So that's awesome.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, appreciate it so much. You guys coming on and talking about this, and
great fun.
I'm excited about the reaction that we'll get. We'll see what happens, and. Can't wait to make more music with you guys.
Exactly. Yeah, well, I say, we'll start sending files across the ocean again, hopefully maybe even next week.
Sounds good.
Okay, no, brilliant. Well, that's been an absolute blast, guys.
Yeah.
Every minute of that is great fun.
It really has. Thanks.
Thank you, guys.
Yep, thanks so much.
Cheers, Mike.
Thank you, guys.
Okay. No, we're going to sign off.
All right, guys. Take care.
Bye, guys. Bye.
All the
bye,
best.
Everybody. Thank you.
Bye. 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 Bye, Gene. Bye, Gene Simmons.
Oh, my cheeks.
How do you hang up?
The red one.
Oh, did you hit that red button?
Is it?
End call.
Okay, everyone, that is episode 78 of the Great Divide podcast, and as you might imagine, this was a pretty special one for me. It's been amazing to be working on this music with Bruce and Jamie over the last few months, and it's been kind of hard not to say anything about it, but I'm glad we didn't say anything about it until now, because it's nice to be able to tell you about it and then also to be able to present you with the finished versions. So hope you guys enjoy it, really do, and hope you will let me know what you think. So thanks so much to Svein, John, Bruce, Jamie, and I also wanted to let you know the exact site where you can download this if you feel so inclined to do so. I didn't quite have it ready when I was doing the show, but if you want to download any of this, sample the tracks, go to bjwatson.bandcamp.com. That's bjwatson.bandcamp.com, and there you can see the beautiful cover art designed by Tim Eldred, and you can sample the three tracks that are on this EP, and you can purchase, download them if you would like to. So hope you feel them worthy enough to add to your collection. And if you want to download any of my own stuff too, you can do that. If you go to kirchmusic.com, you can find my own music, including the most recent thing I've done, which is an EP called Rail. And there are four other full-length albums available too. And that's on iTunes, Spotify, whatever. Just search for Thomas Kirchable on any of those places and you'll find it. But hopefully more WKW music is coming in the near future. In fact, we're working on stuff already, so I'm sure it will. It's just a matter of timing and getting the time to do it. But obviously, as you can imagine, it's not too hard to make time for something like this, at least from my perspective. So it's been quite a thrill and quite an honor. So anyway, thanks for listening. We really appreciate it. And Svein and I will be back fairly soon, hopefully, with another episode where we will be talking strictly big country stuff. But in the meantime, hope you enjoy this new music and hope it means something to you. I know it does to me. So thanks, everyone. Talk to you soon.
I must say, I'm sitting in front of my laptop, because we're doing this on Skype, and I'm sitting in front of the laptop, and there in the middle of the laptop is a picture of a mustachioed John. I mean, that is going to be the village people's moustache I've ever seen. And he's got the cop hat on, and he's got the dark sunglasses. It's just so camp. I love it.
I moustache you a question.
You've got to get that picture online somewhere.
I thought it was a very fetching photograph of myself.
It is fetching. It's definitely fetching.
Yeah, I mean, I think that would get a lot of likes.
come fetch me a Village People record, will you, John?
Young man.
Hands across the ocean, right?
To the future.